Chapter 6. When I was 18, my Uncle Paul, the man I was named for, died of a heart attack. My mother and dad took me to Chicago with them to attend his funeral and visit relatives from my father's side of the family, many of whom I had never met. We were gone almost a month. In some ways, that was a good trip, a necessary and exciting trip, but in another way, it was horrible. I was deeply in love, you see, with the young woman who was to become my wife 2 weeks after my 19th birthday. One night, when my longing for her was like a fire burning out of control in my heart and my head, oh, yes, all right, and in my balls as well, I wrote her a letter that just seemed to go on and on. I poured out my whole heart in it, never looking back to see what I'd said because I was afraid cowardice would make me stop. I didn't stop, and when a voice in my head clamored that it would be madness to mail such a letter, that I would be giving her my naked heart to hold in her hand, I ignored it, with a child's breathless disregard of the consequences. I often wondered if Janice kept that letter, but never quite got up enough courage to ask. All I know for sure is that I did not find it when I went through her things after the funeral. And, of course, that by itself means nothing. I suppose I never asked because I was afraid of discovering that burning epistle meant less to her than it did to me. It was 4 pages long. I thought I would never write anything longer in my life, and now look at this. All this, and the end still not in sight. If I'd known the story was going to go on this long, I'm sure I never would have started. What I didn't realize was how many doors the act of writing unlocks. As if my dad's old fountain pen wasn't really a pen at all, but some strange variety of skeleton key. The mouse is probably the best example of what I'm talking about. Steamboat Willie, Mr. Jingles, the mouse on the mile. Until I started to write, I never realized how important he... yes, he... was... The way he seemed to be looking for Delacroix before Delacroix arrived, for instance. I don't think that ever occurred to me, not to my conscious mind, anyway, until I began to write and remember. I guess what I'm saying is that I didn't realize how far back I'd have to go in order to tell you about John Coffey, or how long I'd have to leave him there in his cell, a man so huge his feet didn't just stick off the end of his bunk, but hung down all the way to the floor. I don't want you to forget him, all right? I want you to see him there, looking up at the ceiling of his cell, weeping his silent tears, or putting his arms over his face. I want you to hear him, his sighs that trembled like sobs, his occasional watery groan. These weren't the sounds of agony and regret we sometimes heard on E-Block, sharp cries with splinters of remorse in them. Like his wet eyes, they were somehow removed from the pain we were used to dealing with. In a way, I know how crazy this will sound, of course I do, but there is no sense in writing something as long as this if you can't say what feels true to your heart. In a way... it was as if it was sorrow for the whole world, he felt. Something too big ever to be completely eased. Sometimes I sat and talked to him, as I did with all of them. Talking was our biggest, most important job, as I believe I have said, and I tried to comfort him. I don't feel that I ever did. And part of my heart was glad he was suffering, you know, felt he deserved to suffer. I even thought sometimes of calling the governor, or getting Percy to do it, hell, he was Percy's damn uncle, not mine, and asking for a stay of execution. We shouldn't burn him yet, I'd say. It's still hurting him too much, biting into him too much, twisting in his guts like a nice sharp stick. Give him another 90 days, Your Honor, sir. Let him go on doing to himself what we can't do to him. It's that John Coffey I'd have you keep to one side of your mind while I finish catching up to where I started. That John Coffey lying on his bunk. That John Coffey who was afraid of the dark, perhaps with good reason. for in the dark might not two shapes with blonde curls, no longer little girls but avenging harpies, be waiting for him. That John Coffey, whose eyes were always streaming tears, like blood from a wound that can never heal.